Red Film Radio.
Red Film Radio.
Interview.
Interview.
Our first guest is Niels Daniel Pila to tell us all about The Sound of Disney, the new exhibition of the German Film Museum in Frankfurt. Niels, welcome to the show.
Hi, Matt. Thanks for having me.
It's a real pleasure for me to have you here. The focus of this interview will be the museum's latest exhibition, which runs from the 7th of August to the 10th of January, named The Sound of Disney. And before we begin, Niels, I was wondering whether you maybe would be able to give our listeners some sort of an overview of the Deutsches Film Institut und Filmmuseum, perhaps a bit about its history and its mission statement.
Right. Thank you. It's one of the oldest institutions of its kind in Germany, and it's one of the largest. And it's based in Frankfurt here. It has a rich collection with its own film archive, poster collection, music archive, etc. So we're having 2 to 3 major exhibitions per year. And our special exhibition for this summer is The Sound of Disney. So it's our new show that we're having accompanying our permanent exhibition at the museum, which is also accompanied by many film screenings. The museum has its own cinema. We have workshops, panel discussions, talks, and many, many film screenings, of course.
Before we start to talk about The Sound of Disney, what are some examples of previous exhibitions?
Mm-hmm. So we had a show, for example, about single films, which have an outstanding position in the history of film, such as Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey. We did a major exhibition for its 50th anniversary 2 years ago here at the museum. There's also the Stanley Kubrick touring exhibition that actually started here in Frankfurt at the Deutsches Film Museum back in 2004-2005, which is still on its world tour at the moment at the Museum of the Moving Image in New York City. Or we also had exhibitions about costume design, about art design, film music composers, of course, from time to time, special exhibitions about German film history, such as Rainer Werner Fassbinder, or just the latest exhibition before our show now about Sound of Disney was about the very famous actor Maximilian Schell.
Wow, that's some really interesting stuff there. And now, of course, equally as interesting, the new exhibition, The Sound of Disney, mm-hmm. which you mentioned. But would you like to maybe give us a brief introduction of it before we mm-hmm. dissect it a little bit?
Yeah, sure. It's a very interesting focus that we have with this new exhibition because with film museums and film museum exhibitions in general, the focus is more on the visual aspects of film. And here, well, not for the first time, of course, but with new, how could you say, with a new awareness, we focus on the sound aspects. So the center, at the core of the new exhibition, there's not the visuals, the visual part of film production and film reception, but it's the sounds, it's the voices, the music, and everything related to it. So we changed a little bit, we shifted a little bit the attention towards the sound.
In other words, it offers a new perspective on an underexplored aspect of mm-hmm. the history of Walt Disney and Disney films. This is a starting point maybe to explore the historical context of mm-hmm. the exhibition, because I understand that Walt Disney was a pioneer in the use of sound in many ways, in cinema at large, but particularly in animated films. Mm-hmm. But what is the historical context in the sense of why did he perceive the importance of sound mm-hmm. and why did he experiment with sound so much?
Mm. Well, Disney was actually one of the first who pioneered synchronized sound in animation back then in the late 1920s. So there were, of course, the Fleischer studios at that time. They already started in the mid-20s. And so Disney wasn't the first. But Disney was very popular with his early sound cartoons in the late 1920s and the early 1930s. He started, of course, with Mickey Mouse 1 year after the big success of The Jazz Singer in 1927, and Steamboat Willie was released in 1928. And then he had, after this big success with Mickey now talking with his own voice, by the way, with Walt Disney dubbing Mickey Mouse in the early years, he started with a very popular series back in 1929 until 1939 for one decade with the so-called Silly Symphonies. And that was a very big success at the box office and with the audience and the critics. So he pioneered early synchronized sound with music that was the basis for the animation. So it was the way that the music came first and the dialogue was recorded first and the animation was drawn after it.
And here's an interesting term that I recently came up with. Actually, mm-hmm. It was mentioned on an interview that I recorded yesterday, and then I saw it in the description of the exhibition. Mickey Mousing. What does that term mean?
Yeah, well, that's a special term that was coined by David O. Selznick. It was not by Disney himself, but of course everybody associates it with Disney and his most famous character, Mickey Mouse, his alter ego. And this Mickey Mousing means there's a kind of a doubling in the synchronized sound, that the music that accompanies the scenes doubles the action that you actually see in the images. So for us today, it may sound a little silly or a little too much in this doubling, but in the earlier years of synchronized sound in cartoons, that was the common technique, so to accompany the action with doubling the action through the sound effects.
You mentioned the Silly Symphony films, but then also in 1940 there was a landmark production, Fantasia. Mm. What is it that made this film so special?
Well, with Fantasia, Disney tried to push the boundaries what could be done with animation and the use of classical music. So he had Leopold Stokowski, the famous conductor, and the Philadelphia Orchestra, and they used these two institutions for Fantasia, playing, conducting very famous classical music by Beethoven, for example, and animated cartoons, short cartoons of about 10 minutes each, and put that together for a feature-long film. So that was classical music turned into pictures. It was a synesthetic experience. So from its aesthetic standpoint, it really pushed the boundaries for its time, but also from the technical point of view, because Disney was really a pioneer in stereophonic sound recordings and pushed the boundaries also concerning the technical way of production, not only with his multiplane camera and the use of Technicolor in already the early 30s, but also with the sound recording and stereophonic sound way ahead of its competitors' time.
I suppose when talking about Disney and its use of music, we should mention that aside from working with already established compositions by great composers, it started putting out its own compositions as well quite early, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. It had composers that were very closely linked to the studio. So, for example, Carl Stalling for the first Mickey Mouse sound cartoons in the late 20s, early 30s, or then Frank Churchill, Larry Morey, these are names that are very popular in the 30s. And then later on, we have composers that are only working for Disney or often working for Disney until the composers in the 60s, the very famous Sherman brothers, Richard and Robert Sherman, with big successes like Mary Poppins or The Jungle Book. These are the latest films that we discuss in the exhibition, because we end with the year 1967, and with The Jungle Book, the last production that was produced under the supervision of Walt Disney, who died in December 66.
Right, so in other words, the focus of the exhibition is on the films that were produced while Walt Disney himself was still alive.
Right, so we start in 1928 with Steamboat Willie and the early sound cartoons, and we end with 1967 and with The Jungle Book.
But another aspect explored within the exhibition is voices and voice actors, right? What can you tell me about that?
So Disney had very famous voice actors and actresses working for his studio. So Pinto Colvig, for example. And we have the great privilege to have some original material from the Pinto Colvig archive in our exhibition. So there are some music notes with the personal remarks on it by Pinto Colvig, how things have to be played or acted, some dubbing scripts. Pinto Colvig, of course, who played Pluto and Goofy for many, many years. Or if you have Jimmy McDonald, for example, who built up the entire special sound effects department at the Disney Studios in Burbank, and also later voiced Mickey Mouse for over 30 years from the late 40s until the late 70s. And of course, many other voice actors and actresses, many talents that worked exclusively for the studio and created the very famous characters that are still known and loved today.
So whereas, you know, on the Looney Tunes cartoons of Warner Brothers, they had Mel Blanc doing so many of the characters, there was a lot more voice actors involved in Disney productions.
Mm-hmm. Right, definitely, yeah, that's true.
And but you also, I think, touch on the foreign dubbing, in other words, outside of the United States or English-speaking places, geographical locations too, right?
Right. Well, Disney as a brand is, of course, a global phenomenon, and we tried to sketch the international impact of the movies around the globe with the dubbed versions that are very famous. And so we decided to represent each of the classics from the late 30s, with Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs being the first animated feature film, until the Jungle Book from the late 60s, until the Jungle Book from the late 60s, to represent it with one song, one iconic song. And we shift within the song from the original English soundtrack, the original version, to another foreign dubbed version. So, for example, you can hear the Wooden Head song from Pinocchio from the early 40s in the Japanese dubbed version, or you can hear the song by the dwarfs in Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs in Hindi, for example, or you can hear Bella Notte, the song from Lady and the Tramp, in Italian, or Cinderella in Finnish. So we try to sketch this global impact with the international dubbed versions. And these are done very carefully. So the Disney dubbed versions are the best among the best and most elaborate and really most expensive dubbed versions that are done within the dubbing process from a company perspective side.
Yes, I'm glad that you mentioned Lady and the Tramp, because that score was co-written by Peggy Lee, and this is the year of the 100th anniversary of her birth. So right. Peggy Lee, we speak your name and we salute you. But another aspect of the exhibition that I feel like we should highlight is the sound effects too, and this is a quite impressive craft, and I think it's well represented within this particular exhibition, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. So we especially feature Jimmy McDonald's work in the exhibition, being the founder of the Disney sound effects department. And he was such a creative genius. He invented so many sound effect machines that were actually built in times before digital sound libraries. So we go back to a time where there were machines built, for example, to create the sound effect of a thunder or rain. Or we have a little clip, for example, showing Jimmy McDonald in the sound effects department how a cartoon is synchronized with sound effects live in the soundstage. So these are really great exhibition items that we have, and we especially highlight his work.
Yes, so it's a fascinating exhibition. It's really fascinating stuff. But just so we understand, and given the current global situation, are we talking about a physical exhibition or a virtual exhibition?
Well, actually, we have a physical exhibition, and it's quite a privilege to have it in these times. We are very lucky that we could open it as a physical exhibition, but it's also accompanied by a digital program on our website. So we're doing both at these very strengthening times. So we have live events at the exhibition, we have guided tours with small groups, for example, we have individual visitors, and we have all the accompanying events with talks, with lectures, workshops at the German Film Museum here in Frankfurt, but also we have an accompanying digital program on our website. For example, in August, we start with an interview with the famous Disney legend Andreas Deja, who grew up in Germany and fulfilled his dream to become a Disney leading animator. And he worked for Disney over 30 years, and he's giving us insight into this very creative time working for Disney for over 30 years and creating such famous characters such as Jaffa from Aladdin or Scar from The Lion King, for example.
Wow, it sounds really exciting. And how long does it take to put an exhibition like this together? And where does the treasure trove of material featured in the exhibition actually come from?
So we started back in 2019 already preparing the exhibition. And of course, we hope to open it before the corona break happened in spring, but then we had a delay caused by the pandemic, and we're now very lucky to having it opened in August 2020. So you could say it took over a year from the very first preparations until the opening caused by the pandemic delay. And the items come from very different collections. Nothing comes directly from the Disney archives, but we had a very close contact in collaborating with Disney for the exhibition, both for Disney Europe and especially Disney Germany in Munich, but also the Disney archives in Burbank in California. But most of the items actually come from a collection from Munich, the Munich City Museum, and they are holding a very rich collection of Disney original cells and cell setups that were put together, that were curated back in the late 50s for a touring exhibition by Walt Disney. So we're very lucky to have access to this treasure. And the Munich City Museum back then was lucky in 1963. So this special touring exhibition that was curated by Walt Disney back in the 1950s toured around the world and showed the audience how Disney animation was made at that time. And there were special original cells from the original movie productions that ended in the exhibition and new cells that were produced showing how cell animation was made. And materials ended up in the collection in Munich because the last exhibition stop of the World Tour exhibition at that time was Munich. So we are very lucky that we are now having this treasure from the Munich City Museum and having these originals in our exhibition.
Absolutely. It's great that they were preserved that way. Excellent. So let's remind our listeners that the Sound of Disney exhibition runs at the Deutsches Film Institut und Filmmuseum from the 7th of August to the 10th of January 2021. How was my pronunciation, Niels? I probably butchered the
no,
name.
No. No, that's great. You can also say German Film Museum. I mean, it's the same.
I probably should have gone for that one. But Niels, it's been an absolute pleasure. And just a final quick question, and as a bit of fun, which one of the classic Walt Disney characters is your favorite, or who do you identify with the most and why? For me, it's always been Donald Duck. But how about you?
Oh, well, that's a tough one. Well, The Jungle Book, the last picture that we feature in the exhibition, is very popular in Germany. I have to admit that because of the German dubbed version, which was done very carefully, but also with very free translations back in 1967. And there are some very iconic songs, for example, the German version of The Bear Necessities, the iconic song by the Bear Baloo. So maybe I would opt for that one, the Bear Baloo in the Jungle Book.
Baloo, all right. Yeah, yeah, cool. Great stuff. Niels, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
The pleasure was mine. Thank you so much, Matt.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.